Guten Morgen, good morning,
Wie geht's?
grüezi, as we say in Switzerland.
Da, it is a, well, I do remember it's extremely important. There are many versions of German language, and never ever try yet to underestimate the importance of speaking proper German. In a Swiss version, Austrian version, German version, and inside German versions, a whole bunch of different variations.
And for us, this is extremely important. Swiss German is our crucial element, instrument of differentiation with which we show and display we are not Germans. And when I'm listening to you, I sometimes have the impression that to mix something up, that you talk to the Swiss, but you mean actually the Germans.
Europeans,
I
yeah.
beg
I mean,
you to hold strictly
right,
the line here.
Sure. There's always a line, of course, especially when we're talking about Italian part of Switzerland, yeah, in Lugano, in those
absolutely
places. Yeah. Well, yeah, no. Of course. Okay, so what kind of European stupidity I have to fight this morning? So well, what are the misunderstandings with Russia? What are the new wishful thinking from Europe, like, oh, Russia is losing, Russia is this, Russia is that? Because every time when I read comments on your site, I have a feeling that people that are leaving those comments, we can easily divide. Part of them, they're actually very much interested in knowing the truth and at least to hear our point of view. Others are just trying to say, come on, how can you speak with such an ugly person? Aren't you Putin Versteher? And you do not understand. He's the one that he should never be listening to. Those are usually Ukrainians. And actually, it's quite easy to determine them because they're saying, oh, now you see, Putin's troll farm is leaving all the comments. Don't trust them. So let's leave this nonsense aside. Let's talk about serious things. A week passed since our last conversation. Are we getting closer or further away from the war? And the answer is tragic. We're getting even closer to the war.
I think I totally agree with your introduction that this stupidity of not engaging in dialogue is really a big problem and causes, of course, on all sides, by the way, this kind of propagandistic hyperbole and this overconfidence of the own position. And I think you're right in saying, in pointing out, that in especially in Europe, I'm afraid to say, these feelings, these perceptions are prevailing. What occupies me at the moment, and probably we can discuss this in this program first, I see that especially in Germany, there is this strange feeling that they really start to believe that Russia is almost done on the battlefield, that there is no progress whatsoever, that Zelensky is like, you know, immediately before declaring victory. And it's interesting that the BBC and The Economist, which are not truly Russia-loving publications or Kremlin-loving publications, both of them counter this narrative. In The Economist, they say in Kramatorsk, they are actually dismantling the industry and putting it 1,000 kilometers to the west, which is not a sign of Russian defeat. I mean, obviously, they're preparing that the Russians are getting closer. And then we have the case in BBC of, I can't pronounce it correctly, and Konstantinovka, where to the surprise of the English journalists, Russian soldiers were seen. But in the German general audience, these news are not there. And the second observation to start this program off, I made my show this morning about a very gloomy topic. I was talking about the Operation Barbarossa.
Right.
This book here by Andreas Hilgruber, which is one of the best books ever written in the German language. I know about this terrible war of annihilation by Germany. And it is striking if you read what's in here. I mean, it's abominable. It's an absolute abyss of terrible ideological, criminal behavior. They wanted to annihilate the Russians. They wanted to subjugate them into the status of a slave people and cutting apart the Soviet Union, as some crazy American generals are planning it today. But the interesting fact, Vladimir, is that on last Monday, on the 22nd, when they remembered 85 years of Operation Barbarossa, there were very few articles in the German media commemorating it. There was Der Spiegel. We have to say Der Spiegel brought it on the cover story. But you could see that there is in the German public, there seems to be the tendency of playing this all down. And because Russia is the Soviet Union is a victim in this narrative, and they don't want to let this come into the perspective, which I think is considerable. It was totally different before, when there were huge articles always, when there was like 80 years, 70 years of Operation Barbarossa. This time, it's another cup of tea.
Guess why?
Of course, because.
Because there is no difference. There is no difference. And that's the. When ambassador of Germany in Russia, meaningless punk with a last name that he disgraced because his grand-grandfathers worked and served Russian Empire on very important position. He dare on the 22nd of June, on the day of mourning in our country, and great sadness, of great catastrophe of our people. He is talking in Russian language, addressing our people and saying, "Oh, no, but you have to keep in mind that nowadays your war in Ukraine and you attempt to falsificate, to lie about history. You shouldn't be doing this. You have zero right to say that you are fighting Nazis. Go and talk to Polish people." Nowadays, when Poland is saying that Ukrainian Nazis are glorifying Melnik and others that used to be Nazis, it's Nazi ideology, and now Ukraine is glorifying them. And that's why Polish political leaders are sending. Now, at first, they're saying that, by the way, we're taking back the award of this, White Eagle or whatever it is. And by the way, we're sending back Ukrainian awards. And at this time, this German guy dare to teach Russians what is right and what is wrong. German! When Germany itself existing nowadays only because of Stalin and Gorbachev. So that's why when we're talking about Germans and German language, I can tell you honestly, even when the time was right, I've been Russian Jew. Would never ever go to Deutschland. I can never. I have many friends in Russia that are Russian Germans, and they respect them a lot. And the German people coming from different parts of Germany played extremely important role in Russian history, starting with Ekaterina the Great and ending with Russian generals, scientists, no question. But when I hear German language, well, you can imagine being a Jew when I hear German language. That sounds so much like Yiddish. There's only one feeling inside me. Only one feeling. Hatred. And sadness. And it's something that I have to fight in me. I realize that it's wrong, it shouldn't be like this, and great German language has nothing to do with Nazi ideology. But is it true? Or German Nazism is on the top of the cultural and philosophical development of German philosophy and German religion belief. It's very scary thought, but it's still there. That's why when you're saying that for you, Nazi and Nazism should be just part of the historical process and it should be addressed only towards. We don't see it this way. We see it as ideology. And even by killing leaders, you're not killing ideology. and it's still there. And when we look at first Scholz, then Merz, Baerbock, and all others, how do we see them? They're basically in the same mainstream of German cultural and ideological machine that once put on the very top, not German by nationality, and at first not even citizen of one of the German-related states, but Austrian. But they put it on the top. And they adored him and they loved him. You were not willing, Europeans, were not willing to fight Nazism. You enjoyed it. You loved it. You felt extremely comfortable in this ideology. With Olympic Games in Berlin, with Rassenstrahl, with all those beautiful documentaries, with this cult of superheroes, with Nietzsche, with Wagner, with the great Obermensch that will find the territory that they have to in order to survive. And then suddenly those ugly barbarians from the East, they destroy the beautiful life that Europeans had. Those slaves that they cannot use anymore. All the treasuries coming from Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, that used to be known as Soviet Union. All the masterpieces of art going to the galleries and private ones of the German, French, and all the European establishment. Great Switzerland with a neutral status, prospering from every single side of the conflict. And Satan, we, moral obligations, come on, we're neutral. We are neutral, almost, but money. Money used to be neutral. And what happened with money of those Jews that were killed? What happened there? We won't discuss it. No, we shouldn't. It's neutrality. We shouldn't, of course. But nowadays, with money of Russians, what we can do with them? Well, that's a completely different story. Come on, Russians now, come on. Russians, they managed to do this, to do that. What's on the front line? I'll tell you what's on the front line. Yet another exchange of dead bodies. Do you know what's the ratio? We gave back to Ukrainians 553, if I remember correctly, killed Ukrainian soldiers. Do you know how many we received back? Take a wild guess.
Yeah, it's the ratio, I guess, is totally different from what we are reading in our newspaper.
We gave 550 plus, we received back 30 plus. When we're talking about, well, Russia is almost, what Russia? On every single position, we're moving forward. And not only Liman, not only Konstantinovka. Yes, we're doing our job. It's not 100 kilometers per day. It's not 10 kilometers per day. It's 100 meters, but every day. Sumy, Kharkov. Talk with people there. Talk with how many villages and little towns in Dnipropetrovskaya gubernia have been relocated. We're doing our job. But what is the most important thing? We're doing it steadily. And our losses cannot even closely be compared with Ukrainian losses. But you cannot check, because that will kill the fairy tale that Russia is losing. Russia will never lose on the war field. Never, ever. We live in the war. That's the part of our survival code. We know how to fight. We're Russians. We love to suffer. So all the misfortunes, all the hardships, they cannot destroy our will. And our soldiers and our generals, they are the best in the world. The best in the world. But what I'm looking at right now is yet another cunning plan of the Western hypocrites. when they love to see how Russians are killing Russians, how Slavic people are killing Slavic people, and they applaud it. And they're willing to do whatever it takes for those barbarian tribes to destroy one another. The benefit? Our natural resources. As usual, West never brings civilization. West brings humiliation. That's why your colonies never been developed. And you'll pay for it. Not Swiss, of course, Europeans. How many people from colonies were governing Austro-Hungarian Empire? How many people from colonies were governing and running United Kingdom? How many of them? And when they said, oh, come on, Russia is an empire, they've been always, you know, extremely harsh with the colonies, and you're the same as we are. Not even close. Look at Russian aristocracy. How many of them came from colonies? Who are running Russian Empire? Germans, Ukrainians, Georgians, starting with Russian Empire and Soviet Union. Who are Russian generals? Through all over Europe, all nationalities, through all over territories that became part of Russia. What people we destroyed up to the point of annihilation? None. Soviet Union, Baltic states, oh, they suffered severely. That's what we started discussing. Population of Baltic states increased. Economy increased. Level of consumption was higher than in Moscow. Members of Politburo, how many of them were from Baltic states? A lot. On the most important positions. Russian military, yes. Secret services, yes. Everywhere. Oh, we were oppressed heavily. Really? By whom? By people of your own nationality? Stop, you know, giving us this baloney. Talk with us with facts on your hands. Caia Kallas. Have you ever asked the question, what family Caia Kallas came from? Have you asked this question? You know the history? The family history of Caia Kallas? Just enjoy reading it. She was very top-notch Soviet official. She was born with silver spoon. Oh, she suffered heavily during Soviet times. But of course, enormous suffering. Her father is one of the top-notch managers of the government bank. How suffer? Oh, well, poor girl. She grew up in a labor camp. Shit, no. We'll continue about those fuck faces right after the break. I will shut down and Roger will go ahead.
I mean, it was impressive what you were just saying. And I'm listening to you, and I respect your point of view, and I can share many of your observations. I think you're absolutely right in pointing out this extremely dangerous arrogance based on a militarism without military today, which seems to have enchanted or somehow bewitched some of the brains of our politicians in the Western Hemisphere. Fortunately, they are not just the guys around you just mentioned, like Kallas and others. I mean, we have a complete, or I would say a rather different American government now, who has a totally different position on the Ukraine war. But of course, the Europeans, and I can understand what you're saying, are playing a very sad role in this respect, and I guess also a very dangerous role. And you have to tell our viewers what will be the consequences of this. You know, the Russians are already lying on the ground, hanging in the ropes, and now we can somehow come from a position of strength in order to dictate our terms of peace. I mean, this seems to be a bit the mentality in some of those quarters in the European Union.
Wishful thinking.
Wishful. I mean, you can elaborate on that. But you brought up another thing. It's for me one of the most interesting and disturbing questions that we have to face. And this is the question of this evil of National Socialism, which was epitomized by the most terrible of all wars that have ever been launched, which was the invasion of the German Wehrmacht into Russia. And I just want to stress this on the basis of a German historian, Andreas Hilgruber, who said that behind this invasion was primarily this rotten ideology of racism on steroids, the attempt to destroy, to annihilate the so-called Jewish Bolshevik world conspiracy, to really tear it out with its roots, and then to push down the Slavic people in Eastern Europe and in Russia to some kind of eternal serfdom. And this was not figured out by some lunatics in a madhouse who, they didn't give them their daily doses of tranquilizers, but there were some guys figuring this out, which in their spare time were listening to Mozart. Some of them graduated, they had their dissertations in European history, in German history. And and this is the crazy thing. This was not just some like conscious evil, but these guys, they were convinced that they were doing mankind a service. This means they were enabling themselves, ermächtigen themselves. They were declaring themselves like some kind of saints who were delivering goods to the earth. I mean, they thought they were very close to the highest ideals of whatever they want, whatever they called it, their kind of civilization. And this is what I called the triumph of moralism, not of morality, of moralism over common sense. And this is what we saw at the time. And your question is, I mean, how deep is that ingrained in the national character of the Germans? And is this some kind of, as Daniel Goldhagen wrote in Harvard University, is this some kind of a declaration of the inner being of a culture that it culminates in this kind of murderous insanity? And this is a question I have really thought a lot about it, and it still haunts me. But I have a bit of a different explanation than you. I would never embark on a narrative and say, well, these are the Germans, these are the evil bastards, or these are the Europeans who are capable of this stuff, and we, the Russians or the others, we are like, we are the other, we are the good guys, and evil is exclusively reserved for the other side. I think this is a simplification. I think this case of the Operation Barbarossa, this culmination of insanity, is somehow the display of how human beings can behave. Even highly cultivated nations, which had the best of relationship with Russia. You were mentioning Alexander Graf Lambsdorff. I was in your foreign ministry. I saw all the pictures of the former foreign ministers of Russia and of course, the Tsarist Empire. And some of the names were very strangely written in Cyrillic. And I was asking the guy, what are these names? And he said, these are all the Lambsdorffs. They have this strange Baltic German name, so you can see it. It's different than Russian names. There was a symbiosis between the Germans and the Russians. There was also a conflict. We had a symbiosis of culture, also of political inspiration. I want to remind you that your favorite communists, your cherished Stalinists, Lenin and Stalin, they were ideologically inspired by a German, by Karl Marx. And we as Swiss say every time there's a
Still
fuck
Jewish,
up in
but of
history, Germans
German
are involved.
citizenship.
But again, I want to point out that this madness, this crime, this Operation Barbarossa should be a display for every human being. And we should say this is the possibility if we let politicians act without checks and balances, if we give too much power to the political elites. And here I dare to say, highly respected Vladimir Solovyov, I think that in this respect, there can be said a lot of things about the emergence of National Socialism in Europe. And one has to ask himself the question, why, if these guys were so stupid, and in the end, they made the crime of a millennium, how was it possible that a lot of Europeans at the beginning thought that this was a weapon against the perceived enemy in Europe? And the enemy was at that time the Bolshevik state. It was Russia. It was Stalin. It was Lenin. Let me say this. This is something you are missing out here. I studied it thoroughly. There were a lot of Russian noble people in Germany in the 20s. And they were telling the Germans, have you seen what the Bolsheviks have done to the Tsarist family? Have you seen this cruelty, this annihilation of class? They destroy the kulaks. They kill the entrepreneurs. They put the bourgeoisie to the gulag. And this, of course, was highly seen in Europe, was highly seen in Germany, which was treated totally unfairly, totally unfairly. After the First World War, now it's my turn to speak. Germany was humiliated by the Great Britain, by the United States of America. They were saying, you are to blame for the First World War. You have to pay for thousands of years. I mean, they were creating this hatred, this resentment. But I'm afraid to say, Lenin, probably Stalin a bit less, but Lenin, he was declaring world revolution on German soil. The communists, they were not just Mother Teresa's running around in Berlin and in Munich. And therefore, we have to understand that this madness, which culminated in Germany, I totally agree. And it's a disgrace, Vladimir. It's a disgrace how they are not talking about it today. It's disgusting how the same people who declare themselves to be the great moralist, they are very, very quiet. And they're always speaking of history and their woke attention to the evils of history. It's all crap. I agree with you, because when it doesn't serve them, they forget about it. But it would be a grave intellectual mistake to think that only the Germans and only the Europeans are capable of this.
Of course,
every country,
sure,
even Switzerland, we have our dark sides. We are not proud of it.
Don't touch Switzerland. We agreed on that.
And
we
neutrality,
don't touch Switzerland.
I have to give you some how do you say, additional training that I have to explain it to you, because I know the Americans, the Russians, they never understand.
Right.
But the Russians, they should understand, because our neutrality, we owe also to Russia, to your Tsar,
yes,
Alexander,
exactly,
which was in love with the girl from Neuchâtel.
Right.
And he has a great guy who was like his educator. So again, I agree with a lot of you, what you say, but don't take the wrong conclusions.
Let me put some wood into this fire.
Am I right or am I wrong here, Vladimir?
You're absolutely right. More than that, talking about Lenin and Stalin, and I don't adore them. I just realize their place in history. Lenin and Trotsky, two fathers of Russian Revolution, both came into Russia from abroad. During the First World War, Trotsky spent a lot of time in New York, a year. All the expenses, all the money that he managed to gather were $600. But he managed to live in a nice apartment with a limo driven by the chauffeur, and he had a refrigerator by this time, very expensive detail. He was given $10,000, great amount of money of this time. He was given passport, and through Canada and Britain, they delivered him into Russia. At the same time, the country that is fighting Britain, Germany, get Lenin from Switzerland, put him on the SEAL train, and get him into Russia for the same purpose, to destroy Russian regime that at this time was governed by a Romanov family that were relatives of all great royal families ruling Europe and UK. And the tragedy of the Romanov family when they were destroyed by Bolsheviks happened after United Kingdom, after King George, the cousin of Nicholas, refused to give him refuge. Betrayal, of course. But what's the difference? Yes, when they're talking about Gulag, are we the first one to invent it? Definitely not. Are we the first one that been cruel to its own people? Definitely not. Were there a lot of Russians that were hating and fighting communism? Of course. More than that, one of the ideologies, the greatest, you know, one of the greatest, the black evil, the Satan himself, Rosenberg, he came from Russian Empire, from Baltic states that were part of Russian Empire this time. One of the greatest enemy of Russia, the head on Finland, Mannerheim, he used to be Russian general.
Yeah, he was in Leningrad in the army, exactly. In the cadets as a young man.
In St. Peter this time. So, of course. So, definitely we're talking about almost the same intellectual field. The difference is that the anti-Semitism was part of European history for many years, since 1492. Martin Luther, he hated Jews. That was so obvious for German culture that grew up on this hatred. That's why when they're saying about awful crimes of Germans, Nazi Germans, they'll say, come on, what are they? You blame us for what? For killing Jews? Seriously? That's what Europe was doing since 15th century. What's new in it? Robbing them? That was normal in every single part of civilized world. In the 30s, American senators were stating, well, you know, there may be some things that we should be arguing with Hitler, but his attitude toward Jews is absolutely correct. So-called red sheep. When a lot of social democrats, people with social democrats that were Jews by nationality that came from Russian Empire, were sent back outside of states because they were far too difficult. Anti-communism was one of the main features of America of the 30s. And when they are saying anti-Judaism, come on, but what they've done with the black population in the United States, is it any different? Ideologically wise, why it's okay to hate Afro-Americans, but it's not okay to hate Jews. That's what Germans were saying during the Nuremberg trial. So what's new? That's why right now it's coming back. But in Russia it's different. Yes, we've done a lot of terrible things against our own population, and it's horrible. But at this time, unfortunately, that was part that was happening all over the world. Armenian of, you know, poor Armenians, awful genocide in Ottoman Empire, poor Irish people of the 19th century, poor Indian population of the territories that were controlled by the United Kingdom, Rusins in Austro-Hungarian Empire, Boers during the Anglo-Boer War. Of course, people are cruel, but in our mentality, there's Russian Orthodox Church and Dostoevsky. But what happened with mentality of civilized Europe? In our history, we adopt cultures of different nationalities and people. That's why all our aristocracy is international as such, not like in Europe. We have Tatars, we have Germans, we have Scottish people, everyone. Mm. And they get into the highest position in Russian Empire. No problem. That's in our code. And that's why, funny enough, Stalin, by the way, if to be exact, he destroyed almost every single old Bolshevik. He completely turned around philosophy of Lenin and Marx. Because for Lenin, Russia was not valuable at all. It was just a match to start great proletarian revolution all over the world. For Stalin, it became different. Mm. Only after quite a few years. So, of course, there's not much left from pure Marxism.
Of course. My former mentor, a great Swiss journalist who wrote for the New York Times in the 1970s. Even though he was never employed by the New York Times, he was a great journalist and he was some kind of a mentor for me. And he was the grandson of the personal assistant of Lenin in Zurich. And I still got from him an unpublished manuscript by Leon Trotsky, which is in my office in Zurich. And his family had very close ties to Lenin. And it was very interesting how he told the story of Stalin, and he would subscribe everything you said, that Stalin was somehow destroying all the Lenin people around him, etc. And there is another point I have to stress here, which is also very interesting. I think it was in 1938 or 37, I think it's 38, there was a conference, by the way, in Evian, as we have seen it now with the Americans. And
the conference G7. Of betrayal of Jewish people.
Absolutely. This was the conference of shame, where the German Nazis came and said, who wants to take the Jews? We want to get rid of them. And only two countries offered their help. It was Nicaragua, and it was the dictator of Dominican Republic, Rafael Trujillo, who said, I want to have 1 million Jews who can work as peasants on my island. Hitler received from the Canadian prime minister at the time, I think his name was not Trudeau, but he wrote a letter to Hitler and congratulating on the politics against the Jews. And he asked for understanding that, you know, Canada, we cannot take them because this would create civil uproar. But I mean, the tragedy in Germany.
And the Americans
in Germany
sent back the ship with
back.
Jews.
And absolutely. And the tragedy in Germany. And this is, of course, this is, I would say, I'm 25% German. This is a German aspect. It's they overdo everything. I mean, anti-Semitism in Europe was, of course, in the Middle Ages, it was very strong in Spain. It was also in England. But then it was in France. I mean, the Affaire Dreyfus was such a total scandal. And in Germany, and this makes the whole story even sadder. I mean, in Germany, you had what you can call a symbiosis of so-called Jewish life and German life. Why was it that Berlin was the world capital of industry, of banking, of culture, of universities, of filmmaking? I mean, Hollywood, it wasn't particularly a joke, but I mean, the Germans were up there, and all the directors, Billy Wilder, you name them. I mean, you know them all by heart. I mean, these were all Germans of Jewish origin. And I mean, it's still a shocking mystery how it was possible that on this, there came a guy out of nowhere, and he could somehow mesmerize, or whatever you want to call it, the Germans. And at the end, they came up with killing millions of Jews. And again, for me, this is a story which just shows me that human beings are very terrible. And that the lesson here, of course, ideology is there, I agree. You know, human beings, you just said it, there are bad everywhere. There are great Russians, there are bad Russians. There are great Swiss, there are assholes in Switzerland. I can give you their addresses. No disagreement about that. But what we should keep in mind, never give politicians too much power. Never allow them to delve into their own insanity. And this is something you have to respect as well. There are reasonable people in the West, in Europe, in Switzerland.
100%. That's why every time I'm saying,
I'm criticizing, we are afraid of Russia. We are afraid of Russia because for us, it is somehow disturbing that you have a president which rules in 26 years, which has an authoritarian rule. The people, you know, the people don't understand.
Why?
They're not as educated as you are.
No,
and therefore,
Roger, there's a question. For how many, unfortunately, we're running out of time. So but the thing is, but we elected him. And it was not 26 years. And, we elected him. And plus, we had Medvedev. And there's a big question. And Roosevelt would be running the United States as long as the voters would like him to be the president. And Angela Merkel was running Germany for an enormous amount of years, and that was no problem. And the great founding father of Singapore was running Singapore for an enormous amount of years. Yeah. And when we're talking about, 19th century, 18th century, so is there any reason, if we're talking about the right state of mind?
Absolutely. You know, let me say one very important...
You know, are you married? Well, you know, if the person is married, should he be forced to divorce every 4 or 8 years in order to get yet another wife or husband? So there's very easy question. Good if point. The person is doing his job perfectly, why do you have to change him if people do not want to change him?
Good point. Let me just say one more very important thing. I think it's an absolute disgrace that someone like you is banned and sanctioned in Europe. I mean, this is eternal disgrace. It's a shame. I totally agree. Because it's so important, because you are probably, I mean, I know not everybody, but you are one of those people from Russia who can really eloquently display how you see the world very convincingly. It's desperately needed that guys like you are heard in Europe in order to crush this wall of ignorance which they build around themselves. But one thing, as a kind of bridge-building element at the end of our program, never underestimate incompetence and stupidity in human affairs. And somehow people are just undereducated. It needs more explanation. And I want to urge you not to fall in love with prejudices and some aspects of European national character. There are so many terrible things, but shouldn't we focus also on that which still unites us, which still brings us together? I know it sounds naive, but I don't give up this hope.
You're 100% right. That's why Russia is always welcoming tourists. We're always ready to discussion. We're always, every time, even yesterday, our president
you're
said,
displaying it.
Yeah, we are open for negotiations. We're very open for peace talk. And what we hear from the West? No. You Russians, no. We shouldn't do that. And one last phrase. First of all, thank you for your bravery. Second of all, for your professionalism. And third of all, just little thought. What happened with Jews in Europe? The attitude in the 30s. Doesn't it remind you what's happening with Russians now, the attitude-wise? That's a scary thought. We'll discuss it next week. Thank you so much, Roger.
Спасибо большое,
Роджеру Копелю.